This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast, and we're coming to you from Nashville.
I'm all over the place now. We're coming to you from London. I'm back in the virtual joint, back in North London here with my man Laney in West London over there. How are you doing, Laney?
Yes, I'm all right, mate. Yeah, not as jet-lagged as you probably are. I know where I am at least, and yes. I know where I'll be at 3 o'clock on Saturday as well. I'll be back in the home of world football, mate.
That's right, the home of world football, and I've been around the world watching football the last few days. I mean, a few people have been reporting in, and a few characters know what I've been up to. But as you know, I decided to step out for a few days and went to go and watch the Bees playing out of the country. The Bees are playing Brighton, and also they played Aston Villa. And I went to Florida to go and visit my mum and my family, my brother over there. And I saw the Brighton game over there. And I also saw the Aston Villa game in a place called Nashville, which I had no idea about, Laney. I never knew that Nashville was such a absolutely bonkers place. I just went out there just on the off chance, pretty much, like, you know. And I heard there was a bit of a fan fest out there, Premier League fan fest, which happens every year. Didn't know too much about it. My brother's going there, and I thought, let me just step along with you. And I stepped out into Nashville, and all I can say is, mate, it puts all the other places that we went to in America in the summer, it puts them to shame, because it is definitely an absolutely bonkers party city. And when I say bonkers, literally bars, music, starts at 10 o'clock in the morning, goes on all night. People in the streets driving around in vans, and, you know, girls in trucks, cowboy hats, drinking, loads of cowboy hats, mate, loads of cowboy boots. I've never seen so many cowboy boots in all my life, like, you know, but I've just never seen so much pottiness, like, you know. It kind of reminded me of sort of Newcastle big market, you know, with cowboy boots and sort of and hats on, like, you know, saying multiplied by 10 and starting at 10 o'clock in the morning, not like starting at 6 o'clock at night as it does in Newcastle. It literally is all day. And this is how matters. On Monday, I was getting my plane, and I decided to just stop into town and do a little bit of catch-up work. So I got into town. All of a sudden, this bar was open, 10 o'clock in the morning. So I thought, let me just pop in the bar, and I can sit there and have a cup of tea and everything like that. And I've gone in there, put that down. Next minute, ding, ding, music was playing at 10 o'clock in the morning in this bar. And I'm looking around me, and it's completely full. Everyone's drinking. And it was a work day. It wasn't even a holiday. It was a work day. The place was packed, music. Then I looked down the street, and every other bar was absolutely going full on at 10 o'clock in the morning. That's the kind of place that it is. So,
a band
was playing at 10 o'clock in the morning, not only in that bar, but in every single bar down the street as well. It was absolutely bonkers, you know what I'm saying? And the place was packed. I mean, I sat in the roof garden, so I was in the roof, sitting down there overlooking the whole of Nashville. And it was just, honestly, it was just, I've never seen anything like it. It was just, and to them, it's just normal. It's just completely and utterly normal. They're going, oh yeah, you're going down Broadway. Yeah, that's just what happens. Like, you know, I'm just like, this is bonkers. Like, you know, so it was good, you know. So,
sounds a lot more fun than Wolves away, mate.
Well, Aston Villa away, even, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so,
you know, just they're close to each other, but yeah, which is all good. And like I said, you talked about it a little bit before. I mean, obviously, there's a bit of a Bees presence out there as well. I saw Gary Blissett, hung out with Gary Blissett, Marcus Gayle, obviously, Paul Buckle was out there, his wife, Rebecca Lowe, who's she's the Gary Lineker of American football out there. She's very, very famous. Everyone sort of knows her. So she was out there sort of presenting a live show with the two Robbies, Robbie Earl and Robbie Musto, and also Tim Howard. I met them all as well. Quite mad. Mo Farah's out there. Had a few words of Alan Shearer. Talked to him about France 98. Actually, he was quite stunned when I told him that I was behind the goal when he went in France 98 for the Tunisia game. He was just like, well, really? You know, so chatted to him. Mo Farah's out there, which is quite random as well. Ledley King, I had a chat with him as well about England, because I loved him when he played for England. He was they got injured as well, but yeah, great. So mad. Daniel Sturridge was out there. Honestly, it was bonkers, mate. It was just like, there's loads more characters out there as well, and it was just proper life. 15,000 people over 2 days as well, just watching football on a big screen. So you know, can't get better than that, as they say.
No, that sounds really good, mate. Yeah, missed out on one there, but I'll go next year, assuming that we're in the Premier Division.
Keeping up, listen, there's no presumptions there, mate. You know, things are going in the right direction as far as I'm concerned. I'm probably talking because this has been quite a long intro, but we'll just talk about it later. But I actually managed not only the Aston Villa game, which was absolutely tremendous game, watching that on the big screen. Everyone was going mad, sort of cheering Brentford on. I mean, there's a photograph you see or a video with people like Chelsea shirts and everything like that going mad when we scored our third goal. I mean, everyone was jumping up on top of each other. I jumped on top of Paul Buckle, you know, Gary Plissett kind of. Like, it's going really mad. But then after that, the following day, I actually watched the Tottenham Nottingham Forest game, and I think for me that was even better, because I watched it just right beside a load of Nottingham Forest fans, and they were singing lots of songs about, you know, about European cups, particularly when they equalized. But then, of course, when Tottenham scored their second and third goal, the Tottenham fans retaliated. And it was quite a good feeling, it has to be said, because they just went back right into their shell. And, you know, and I was sitting down there sort of kind of chuckling and smiling. I was there with one of the Gowler's mates, who's a Forest fan, and he's a really nice bloke, but he was a Forest fan. And I couldn't help sort of kind of smile to myself, thinking, you know, mate, you know, it's not looking too good for you at the moment now. And so it's just one of those things, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And you know, it's one of them things, and it's just unfortunately, everything's still in the mix, isn't it? You know, yeah. they win one and they lose, and then we're still drawing. It does crystallise how important this Saturday's game is now, because the games are running out now, aren't they? And the relegation zone is looking, nothing really changed, but you know, it's narrowed a little bit. We just need 3 points and we can sort of breathe a sigh of relief. But no. Sheffield United is going to be a proper tricky game, mate.
It is the big game, and it's the first time we've actually mentioned Sheffield United as well. And again, talking about Nashville, I watched the Sheffield United versus Chelsea game out there. And in a way, yeah, I was quite pleased, because obviously Sheffield United scored a couple of goals, and all the Chelsea fans who were there. It's quite funny, because like what they did is that there's massive, massive crowd for the Liverpool Man United game, like a huge crowd. And they're all singing, all the Man United fans and the Liverpool fans are all singing. But then a lot of them left, and then in comes like the Chelsea fans. And then what they did is that the merchandise people came in and they gave out loads of merch, because there's loads of merch being given out, like, you know what I'm saying, sort of balls, hats. So you're coming around and somebody's trying to give you like a Bournemouth ball, then a Newcastle kind of thing for put you on your wrist, and then a Aston Villa something, then a West Ham thing. So I mean, if you wanted to, you literally could have collected merch from every single team if you wanted to. And I was like, they're coming up to me, they go, West Ham for no interest, Fulham this, absolutely no interest, like, you know what I'm saying, Tottenham something or the other. But then the Chelsea, what happens, Chelsea came in, all these characters, and then the Chelsea people just wheeled in and dished out loads of flags. So there's like millions and millions of flags, they sort of came to everyone. So when they went on TV and Chelsea started playing, if they, when they beat beamed out to the crowd, all you could see was like these massive Chelsea flags. And to be fair, they did a good job. So all my Chelsea mates who had seen it were like going, oh, Chelsea've taken over. They've got loads of fans out there. I'm like, no, they don't actually. What they've done is they've just done a good job to make the optics look really good, to look like they've actually kind of taken it over in a major way. But it was actually quite funny when Sheffield United scored their two goals, because there was a lot of silence coming from the West Londoners, from the other West Londoners, from Milwaukee and where else they'd come from. So Sheffield United, I was quite pleased they got a result. They'll probably talk about that later. But and the other way, I just thought, actually, maybe that's not a good thing for us, because if they've got their tails up after getting a draw against Chelsea, they might think they can get a result against us.
Yeah, well, you know, they've beaten us already this season. So, you know, it's games like the ones against us at the moment. They'll be looking at and thinking, you know, it's a chance to get points. You know, we can look at the games we've played recently, and we can pat ourselves on the back that we've made an improvement, but we haven't won. So we're kind of still in it, and you lose Saturday, then the alarm bells seriously go off. You know, I think we've all made the presumption that, you know, that there's points to be had here. But we've seen football for long enough to know that we take that for granted. And if the players take it for granted, then you're looking at coming unstuck. So, you know, I'm nervous. You know, I'm excited, because I think, you know, I've seen what my team can do in recent weeks, and you know, I'm confident that, you know, the players coming back and Brian starting and scoring goals now, and you know, things have improved for sure. But until you get those 3 points, by hook or by crook, you know, even winning ugly, we might have to do that on Saturday. You know, I think it could be quite attritional at times. If we don't create and take our chances, it's going to be really nervous in the GTEC, and we're gonna need a lot of things to go our way. We need Sheffield United to be the Sheffield United they were 3 or 4 weeks ago, where they couldn't defend for Toffee, you know. And we need a couple of other results to go our way as well elsewhere. So, you know, I'm still very much glass half full. But, you know, we've seen quite often that, you know, you count the points already before you've played the game, and it doesn't always work out that way.
No, definitely not. So listen, we've got loads of other stuff that we want to talk about on this podcast as well. Just quickly, just talking about, I mean, things not quite working out, but the fact is that looking forward to next season, because obviously we'll talk about it a little bit later. Obviously, Ivan Toney played against Aston Villa. He was on the bench for the first time, and we'll talk about that, say, a little bit later. But he, you know, it's almost like we're getting in preparation for him to leave the club. And we bought a player who, people are saying he's his replacement, because we've paid £30 odd million for this player. Whether or not he is his replacement, or whether or not he's just another player who we've actually just bought to actually fill the gap, we shall see. Thiago. But it doesn't seem to be going particularly well with Thiago since he signed the deal with Brentford. It's almost like he's taken the eye off the Belgian ball, isn't it, Laney? Because before he signed with us, he was scoring goals for fun. But as soon as he signs for the Bees from Bruges, I think he's at Bruges at the moment now. We decided to leave him on loan at Bruges until the end of the season because they wanted to get Champions League football or something. I don't know what it was. But yeah, we kept him there. He said, there you go, mate, just stay in Bruges. And then since then, he's completely fluffed, isn't he? He can't score a goal for Toffee, can he, Laney?
No, he doesn't seem to have been like very popular with the Bruges fans and with the Belgian press. There was an article yesterday in Belgian football website, and it quoted you know, the great footballer that is Thomas Rosinski, that played a few games for Fulham, and he was quite scathing of Thiago. He's, you know, basically, I'm paraphrasing now, he's, you know, even during his good period early in the season, he looks a clumsy striker. He's also not a real target man. And he's gonna, this is the quote, that you can sell someone with so many flaws for so much money, congratulations. So, you know, whether he's put his Fulham hat on and he's kind of just dissing you know, Brentford, but you know, this is, it's rattled a few Bees fans, the kind of the usual suspects, kind of blaming, you know, looking for a reason to kind of slag a player off before he's even arrived in the country. But some people said, "Oh, can we get out of this deal?" I mean, I don't think you get out of a deal because, you know, Fulham rejects. A lower league Belgian manager kind of slates someone. But, you know, we know that the metrics that he's been judged and we've paid an incredible amount of money out for is not necessarily based on his goal scoring. You know, one of the most kind of head scratchy, stroking lightning conversations I've had with you in the presence of was with Matt Benham when he said over a beer that goal scoring is not the first thing he looks at when he looks to buy a striker. And we're like, what? And they see things so differently. You know, it's about our system. It's the chances that we know we'll create for them, not the ones that he's being created for at the moment. Yeah, of course, you know, ability and strength, and you know, is the way he finishes. That's all important, but it's not the most important. It's kind of like he's going to be airdropped into Brentford, and it's like one of those things. Like, you imagine, yeah, he's good, but you imagine how good he could be for us. In the same way that probably a lot of clubs are looking at Ivan Toney. Oh God, he's incredible for Brentford. You imagine what he would do here. You know, imagine what Ivan Toney would do at Man City. Imagine how many goals he would score there. Imagine what he would do at Liverpool. Imagine how many goals he'd score there. And the old proverbial, you know, the one that goes round and round, you imagine what he would do in an Arsenal team. So it's that all comes into it. So yeah, we've paid a lot of money. We are not used to our club paying that amount of money. But you know, it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. It's like if you don't start upping the amount you pay, you don't get an improvement in Premier League ready players, and then they get accused of not being ambitious enough and having crap transfer windows. We've already got in our Ivan Toney replacement. Ivan Toney's, you know, is every chance he might still be here. Next season, but bloody unlikely. But you know, until he's gone, he's ours. Yeah, so it's going to be a huge summer and a huge summer of, you know, we need that can't be the last player we buy. It's clear that with injuries, we need to strengthen elsewhere as well. But to have one in the bag, it does take a certain amount of pressure off, and we're gonna have to kind of give him the benefit of the doubt and allow him to integrate into English life and a new way of playing football, Bill.
Yeah, so no pressure on him then when he comes over at all, then, lady.
Oh, it's a massive amount of pressure. Of course, there's pressure. Yeah, and that's what you want. You want big. You want him to be excited and nervous about coming into a team. You know, you want to feed off of that adrenaline that hopefully he's got. You know, if he has taken his foot off the gas there, then, you know, so be it. I mean, that he obviously doesn't want to get injured. It's going to be like his life will be transformed by coming to England. Yeah, it's the biggest move he'll ever make. You know, well, the biggest move he's ever made. And this is life changing. This is like generational wealth changing amount of money that he's going to get to come here. So if he's taking it seriously, then that's great.
That's good indeed. So, I mean, we talk about a player coming in. We're also going to be talking about a player who is leaving on the outdoor. And next be Stuart Dallas, who scored a fabulous goal against Fulham when we absolutely smashed them at Craven Cottage. We put four goals past them in our first season back in the Championship. The bees up, Fulham down, yeah, when Brentford went up from the third tier and Fulham came down for the top tier, and it was proper full-on bees up, Fulham down. The fact we'd been singing that song for the previous 14 years, and then it just came to sort of fruition, that bees that went up and Fulham came down, and then we played them and then we smashed them twice in one season. You couldn't get a better season than that. So yeah, but Stuart Dallas, brilliant goal. The whole history of Dallas, you know, coming over
two
goals. I think of the one in particular that he scored was a great goal, but also just thinking about his, you know, his whole history, him coming over from Ireland, you know, him coming there and at that time when, again, Matthew Benham was using his kind of like, we buy these players and they come from, you know, from rough diamonds as they are, you've never heard of them, but we're going to make them decent players. And you know, he came from Ireland for about £1 million, if I remember rightly, and he came over, you know, like I said, started off, you know, as a winger for us. And he was good. He did some really, really, you know, great player. and we saw him kind of grow as a player. But then, I don't know, in the end, he left us. And the feeling that I had is that, you know, when he left us, we kind of felt that he was, he'd outgrown us, but we could probably get better, I think, is what we thought at the time. And he left, and he ended up going to Leeds United. And to be fair to Leeds United, he actually kind of grew into like a really important player. Moved back a couple of lanes, moved back into defence, became a bit of a fullback, and he went from strength to strength, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. You know, he was really a really exciting prospect. You know, he came from Crusaders in Northern Ireland, and we had him for a bit, and we sent him out on loan to Northampton for a little bit, and he came back stronger, and as you know, he was part of that. Great first season in the Championship when we got to the playoffs and, you know, unfortunately lost up at Middlesbrough. And then, yeah, he got his chance to go to Leeds at the follow. It was following. I'm sure I've got the timeline right. I'm sure he left that summer that we didn't go up in the playoffs, and he moved to Leeds. And then I don't want to play on this too much, but I mean the old elephant in the room is, you know, that Stuart Dallas, you know, he was part of that, you know, Mind the Gap Thomas Frank song, where on the day that Leeds got promoted to the Premier League, he was caught on video kind of singing anti-Brentford, anti-Thomas Frank songs. So that kind
with,
of...
With the trophy as well.
Yeah. Odd behaviour, you know. One of our crew said, you know, strange that on the biggest day of his life to that stage, he's holding the trophy, slagging off his previous club. You know, it was really outrageous, it was really odd, and unless there really was beef, but, you know, leaving Brentford for Leeds, I would have thought that was, you know, a big salary hike and a really good move for him. So I don't think there could have been beef, but maybe he just got carried away.
No, there was beef. There was beef because all during the season, I think, but basically what it was is that Thomas Frank says it as it is. And what he does is he says it, you know, he gives this statistical analysis. So if he plays a team, and he'll say something like, you know, like we might have played Leeds and we might have been better for them. And he just says, you know, he'll say it as it is. And again, certain fans will just take it with a pinch of salt. But, you know, at Leeds United fans, they just take it really, really seriously. So I think there was a scenario where there was a bit of beef between us and Thomas Frank and Leeds. And also we had the scenario when he was the assistant to Dean Smith. And there was a scenario when we were beating them 1-0, if you remember rightly. And then that's the one when Sergi Canos headbutted one of their players and he was in the dugout. And then the ball came over to Thomas Frank, who was the assistant. And then he kept hold of the ball and he just wouldn't give it back to them. And they got really, really annoyed. And then Pontus Janssen came in and scored an equalising goal in the sort of kind of dying minutes of the game to make it 1-1. So there's always been this kind of beef thing going between Leeds and Thomas Frank. And also the other thing is, and I know this for a fact, Thomas Frank doesn't need anything to kind of G him up when he plays Leeds, because Leeds are one of the teams that winds him up absolutely the most. And I think the reason why, maybe because of the fans, maybe what's happened on the bench, there's certain things, most definitely, they're definitely one of the teams. So there's definitely a bit of history and a bit of beef. And I think in the end, when Leeds went up, got automatically promoted, and we got resigned to the playoffs that year, for them, that was one sort of kind of stick two fingers up at you. There you go, mate. So you can give us as much stats as you want. You can say what you want about us. You can say you're better than us, but we've beaten you. And that's 100% where all that came from.
Yeah, no, I know the Leeds beef, but it's him. You know, I don't know what his beef with Brentford would have been.
But he's at Leeds.
Yeah, I know, but I thought that was just, you know, I thought that would, you know, would a bit out of order, but well, more than a bit out of order.
It was bang out of order.
More than a bit out of order, bang out of order. But you know,
no manners.
Anyway, so he got a really bad injury, 2022 against Man City. I think he was. He tried to foul someone and he ended up busting his knee badly, and it's irreparable. So, you know, it was sad to see, you know, a career come to an end, especially when, you know, he played a really good part in Brentford's rise from League One into the Championship. And it was a real stepping stone for him. So, yeah, I mean, we're parked the beef for the moment between us and him. And obviously, you know, we wish him well for the future. We do the manners, we'll keep it classy, and hope he's got a really good future in the game somewhere. And wish him well.
Yeah, wish him well. And to be fair as well, he did release a statement as well today, or was it yesterday? And the statement that he released yesterday, and he actually mentioned Brentford in there, and he talked about Brentford as being part, you know, of his rise, and, you know, couldn't be a better club that, you know, he could have started off his career with as well. So he did the manners with Brentford. And like I said to you, and listen, we have to mention it because elephant in the room, because we'll probably never talk about it again. Maybe, you know, he's looked back and just thought, actually, to be quite honest with you, that's a bit silly of me, what I did there. I was caught at the moment, at the time. Yeah, there was a bit of beef going on, but at the end of the day, you know, what we've done is really good. And at the end of the day, I suppose, maybe the fact that, you know, we're still in the Premier League and they got relegated, he's actually just realised the bigger picture is kind of like, you know, it isn't about that little 10 minutes. It's about kind of the bigger picture. So, you know, you get older. As they say, when you're younger, you do silly things sometimes. And maybe it's a silly thing that he did after having a couple of whiskeys, like, you know, as a good lady, he's just tucked into a few whiskeys, like, you know, did Stuart Dallas, but which is all good. But anyway, listen, good luck with him. I'm sure that he's going to go and go into coaching and have a marvellous coaching career. And he's going to be showing all the people that he's coaching, all the free kicks and the goals that he scored back in the day. So anyway, but listen, talk about scoring goals back in the day. Let's go back in the day to Saturday. Let's go back to, well, Lady will go back to the UK. I'll go back to the USA, the Nashville, because those were the goals. We saw the goals going in to the back of the net. There were plenty of goals as well back in that day. We're going to go and have a little drink. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about that Aston Villa game. So Saturday, we went to Aston Villa. Nice day on Saturday as well, both in this part of the world, from what I can believe, looking at it on the TV, and also in where I was, in Nashville. And the first thing I'm going to talk about and I'm going to say about that game is Brentford, when they're on it, they're on it, okay? And I think this is a really important thing to take on board. You know, you might think, oh, what's he talking about? It's just talking nonsense, or it's not rocket science, is it? But it's not. It's actually really important. Because when we're talking about the position that we're in at the moment now, and the position that we're in where, you know, some people think, oh, relegation trouble, oh, we're not any good, or a terrible side. The fact is that when we're on it, when we notch it up a gear, mate, we are on it. And that game was 100% a game of two halves. You know what I'm saying? First game, we wouldn't say we weren't in the game, but, you know, we were a little bit limp. We just, you know, Villa first, the ball, you could see that they were kind of moving it around and they were going to cause us a little bit of damage. They got them goals. The first goal, very frustrating. Second goal, just after half time. We weren't in it. You know what I'm saying? And then we just went bang. And when we went bang, Villa were, I mean, not funny, they were properly on the back foot. Properly, like they were booting their pants, you know what I'm saying? And we just like, honestly, it looked like, I mean, we got three goals in the end in 9 minutes. We could have got about eight, it looked like, because we were just like, every time we were going forward, you felt that. And I just thought, this is a really positive sign, because the fact is that we know how good we are as a team when we're really on it. And you could kind of see sparks of that coming back. Brian and Bumo, I mean, I thought he was fabulous, you know. Wiesa, I thought he was fabulous. They were just terrorising. They were causing problems all the time when they were going forward, you know. Interestingly, Ivan Toney wasn't in the side because he was on the bench and he came on a little bit later. And it was almost like, oh, Ivan Toney's coming on. Do we really need him? It was like a bit of a weird scenario. But for me, I'm just sort of thinking, I've always said this, but before, you know, previous seasons, even when we were in the Championship, you've got to kind of come good at the right time. And the things have got to happen at the right time. You can have everyone has a little, every team has a little bit of a lull, a little bit of a bad period. And for me, when I saw how we were in that second half, and also we've had other games like the Man United game, and that, yeah, we haven't got the results we're going to get. But any other team that's watching us thinking, mate, I don't want to play them, because look at them, because you know at any stage they can do that. And we, Aston Villa, there's a couple of Aston Villa fans in the crowd. There weren't that many, actually, because they were outnumbered, like I said to you in Nashville. Probably there's about 40, 45 Brentford fans in the crowd, probably about 50, maybe even like that. And there's probably about five or six Aston Villa fans. And they just turned around and said, mate, hands up, you should have absolutely smashed us off the park in that game. We've got no complaints about that. And we were so happy to get a point. And for me, you take that into that next game, because that, for me, is the important thing. Your thoughts, Laney?
My thoughts. So I agree with part of that. I thought we looked good when, obviously, when we scored all the goals. I thought we looked okay up until conceding the first goal. Once again, we did the low block. We defended really well, very, very well structured. But there's always kind of a lapse, or not even if it's not necessarily a lapse, we are susceptible to that curling in, you know, a cross that comes in. And after that, you know, after going 2-0 down, you kind of, obviously you fear the worst. Now, I do agree when we're on it, we're on it. And I also would say that never write us off, because this team have clearly got an incredible spirit. I would say we were on it for not long enough in that second period. Once we got the third goal, Villa came back into it, and you could kind of see an equaliser coming. And if the game was another 10 minutes longer, then I think that Aston Villa probably might win it. So yeah, there are positives to be taken out of it, and encouragement for the games ahead. But we need to be on it for, you know, from the first minute to the last, like we were against Man United, but get our rewards. That seems to have evaded us. I don't know what it is. That luck's going to break, I think. You hope it was. It has to. You know, you can't play really well and not win a game for the rest of the season. But we have to blitz Sheffield United. We have to put in the performance that they can't cope with. And that 9 minutes has to be, you know, 90 minutes. Or if it's not 90 minutes, it's 75 minutes. And we have to create and convert chances. So, yeah, I'd take a lot out of the Villa game, because at 2-0 down, I'm not thinking there's anything to be taken out of this. And then all of a sudden, it shows you what an incredible game football is. You can be bouncing around and you know, celebrating three, you know, cracking goals coming in. You know, Brian Mbeumo's goal, and you know, was just incredible. I mean, Zanka's goal, I'm not even sure he knew what he was doing there, but they all go in. And then Wiesa, the ball that was played in from Reguilon was just stunning. You know, I think Reguilon played his best game for us, and you know, there were big plus points from that in the second half and from the beginning. You know, the way we defend. So yeah, but it's all right to be doing low blocks, and you can't concede. Yeah, you have to then hit on the break and score. But we had to do that from 3-2, from 2-0 down. And I think we'll find out from JV a little bit later how rare it is that, you know, we go on to score three. So it's all, for me, well done. But it Saturday's is the biggest game, I think, this season so far.
Yeah, we've been saying that all the time. Of course, Saturday's the biggest game. And also the other thing is that we know that defensively we've got issues, because we haven't got the defence that we normally have. So it's always going to be an issue. But my whole thing is, and that's why I'm saying being positive about it, there's some teams who would have a defence like that, but they can't score. We can score, okay? You've got teams in relegation problems who can't score for toffee, right? The fact is, yeah, we've got defensive issues, but that's because we've got, and this is all due respect to him, we've got Zanka in defence, you know what I'm saying? And he's cool, but sometimes, like, the ball comes across, like, come on, Zanka, put your head on it. Oh, no, it's gone in the back of the net. You know, you've got Flecken coming out there for a cross. Oh, no, he's missed it. Oh, it's at the back of the net. So we've got issues there, which we know about, but we can score. And trust me, if you can score goals, you've always got a chance. So listen, these next few games coming up are going to be very, very exciting. And like I said to you, it might be a game that we just don't expect to win, that we pull one out of the bag. We might go home, and I want to say it, on Saturday, very, very sad. But then maybe 1 or 2 weeks later, we come out and go, oh, no, we got a result. We didn't expect it to, so, which is all good. But listen, I mean, we're getting excited talking about the game. But I'll tell you what we should do. We should go back and listen to what the fans had to say. We're going to go to Nashville, because we did the post-match podcast from the Fan Fest in Nashville. Let's hear what all the American fans and a couple of English as well had to say. We got Gary Blissett. We got a few other characters, what they had to say immediately after that Aston Villa game.
We got a team that is fighting all the way, and that's what we expect as Brentford fans. we want the players to keep fighting to score 3 goals in the second half. We expect to win that game as well, but what a performance in that second half. But the boys, what a great shift in today. So proud of how they all played.
Brilliant experience out here in Nashville. And, you know, I wish we could just hang on to things a little bit longer. I wanted that goal to be in the 88th and not in the 68th, because we knew Villa had come back at us. But credit to the players. I think we've shown the last 3 games that we're in this fight, and we're going to fight all the way till the end. We'll nick points, we'll win points, and great performances like today will keep us in good stead.
Oh my God, I thought it was over at halftime. And not think after the second half started and they went up 2-0, I didn't think we had a chance there for a bit. But at the end there, I'll take a draw after that. We got Sheffield and Luton next. Let's get 6 points, get away from the relegation.
2-0 down, I was pretty disappointed at the moment, especially when they first scored the first minute coming out of halftime. But Mabueno played great. Wiesa was playing great.
Yes, they did. It was an amazing goal. It was just wonderful to see. Honestly, after they scored 2, I was not sure if we would be able to come back. But I'm so glad we came back.
That's exactly right. So the Man United match was my first match at the GTEC, and it was epic. Incredible to be at the Globe with all the supporters, with you, etc. And then I was there on Wednesday night as well for Brighton. I flew back to Atlanta Thursday night. Got in my car, drove to Nashville yesterday afternoon, and now here we are all together again watching that incredible match. The interesting thing about our club, there is never any quit in those players. They go until the very end, and that's not a skill thing, that's not an ability thing. That's about commitment, about passion, about dedication, and about heart, all those intangibles, and we always have those in buckets. Even when we don't necessarily play our best, we're always going until the very, very end. And yeah, we were up 3-2. Villa equalized. Watkins, 2 goals. However, big picture, I think that if you would have asked all of us early this morning, going to Villa, would we be happy with a 3-3 draw? I think we would have been very happy with a 3-3 draw. So, but the big one is next weekend, and today didn't change that.
I think a question in everybody's mind, are we going to be, you know, the team that was against United or the team that's going to be, that just went against Brighton? And I think they came out, they did a fantastic job. You know, coming back from the deficit of 2 to, you know, going ahead and then unfortunately getting the draw. But I think it was a fantastic game. You know, all the players fought, and
I was very nervous. We weren't playing the best, but after they scored the first goal, I felt like we had all the momentum.
What a game. I was hoping we were going to pull it out, but 1 point's 1 point, right?
Tight.
3 goals in 10 minutes. Yeah. That was so amazing.
You know, coming out at halftime and giving up a quick goal was kind of gutted after that. But the fight in this team, they never give up. You know, it wasn't our ideal lineup today. But, you know, they never give up, and I'm proud of the boys.
It was amazing. To be down by two goals and to come back like that, I mean, it's disappointing to give away a late goal like that, and I was worried about possibly giving up a late winner. But 1 point from Aston Villa on the road, I think I would take that all day. And you know, just lots of really good performances. Reguilon had a massive game. Wiesa again. Mbeumo, I mean, you know, you name it. The fact that we were playing without Ivan Toney and we played so well, I mean, it makes me really feel somewhat more confident going down for the rest of the season. I think that we're going to stay up. There's no doubt about that. And we just need to keep on keeping on.
So there you go, fans. Straight after the Villa game, and like I said to you, Bees legends, Gary Blissett in there. You've got Marcus Gale. You know, he was actually Marcus Gale, Gary Blissett, and Robbie Earl, right? Okay, the crazy gang reunited as well. Got a photograph of them all together as well. And obviously, Paul Buckle was there from the old 1992 legend side as well that got promoted from the third tier to the second tier. So they're all out there as well. Good to see them as well. I want to give a shout out to Joanne and Megan for taking good care of us as well. You know, we were down the brewery on Saturday night. Lots more free beers as well. And also to Patrick from the Visit Tampa Bay as well. Thanks very much for taking good care of us. All the bees out there got well and truly oiled as well on the Tennessee brewery, which is quite good as well. And I said to you, Nashville Bee as well, But could give you a shout for putting us up as well. The Nashville B, Kevin, Reggie as well. The Tallahassee B and the Milwaukee B. She's mad. Milwaukee B. She's brilliant. And then there's also some guy, I can't remember his name. He'd only been supporting Brentford for 15. I think you might hear it on the package as well. Literally, he'd been supporting Brentford for about 15 minutes. They met him in the hotel. They said, like, who do you support? He goes, I've got no idea. They said, support Brentford. He goes, all right then. And then next minute he's coming out, he's got shirts on, he's got scarves, and he's like fully into it. So some people might say it's all a bit touristy, but to be quite honest with you, you've got to get into your football team somehow. So I just thought it was quite hilarious when literally character supporting them for 15 minutes. Then first game was the Aston Villa game, 3-0, and he was like, which is all good. But you can hear the fans there were properly, you know, just, you know, probably on a high, I'd say, after that match. And the one thing you would say, because obviously we're going to talk about Sheffield United a little bit later, the one thing that you don't want is fans and the team being on a high going into a game like that. And that Aston Villa game, it could have gone really, really quite horribly wrong, especially after the Brighton game, which was so flat. That Brighton game, I mean, we like I said to you, you know, I felt that we just didn't want to win. We didn't try and win. We didn't try, but we didn't want to lose. And I thought we did a really brilliant job of not losing that Brighton game, but it kind of got us on a flatness. So coming out of this game now, we're on a high. I personally think that it's just a massive plus for us going into this game. Any players out there? I mean, you talked about Reguilon, who had a great match. You know what I'm saying? You know, setting up them goals, you know, going forward, causing problems. Anybody else in that game who you thought, okay, tell you something, I'm going to tip my hat to you?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't not, you know, mention Brian and Bumo. He made us look like quality every time he got on the ball. You know, he holds it up well, and he gives two or three defenders a fright every time he runs at them. Wiesa again, I thought he had a decent game. I thought Aya, he was decent. I thought Damsgaard, he started, he came on against Brighton, and he was up to the speed of the game straight away. And so often he looks weak, but he's looked pretty strong actually the last couple of times I've seen him now. There were positives, but it's just kind of, as I keep going, I'm not going to go back and say it all over again, but we were really good when we were really good. And apart from that, we looked solid, but we still looked susceptible to letting in goals. You know, Flecken was a you know, flapped at that one, and you know, we do look static sometimes when that ball comes over, curled in, you know, curling in corners or curling in crosses. We don't know how to deal with them, you know, and it's something that we are going to have to deal with, because Sheffield United are going to know that. Everton, following week, they're going to know that. Everton's the game where if we don't get our aerial, you know, strength right, if our goalkeeper is caught in between two minds, Everton are going to feed off that. That's a massive, massive game. So, yeah. There were other good performances apart from Reguilon, but you know, we need more from all of them.
Yeah, definitely. So listen, okay, so look, we're going to go over to JB, because JB is going to give us a few facts and some funk. Let's go to JB and see what he's got to say.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall back again. Of the 19 teams we play in the Premier League this season, we have recorded away league wins against all those clubs in our history, apart from Villa, where we now have 6 draws and 3 defeats on our trips there. In our league history, if we are 1-0 down at half-time in an away league game, 75% of those games have gone on to end in defeat, 18% in draws, and only 7% in wins. For us to score 3 in the second half from 1-0 down away at half-time has only happened in 3% of games. The Villa game is only the second time in our history we've been 1-0 down away at half-time, and the game finished 3-3. The other was at Orient in 1982, when Tony Mahoney, Gary Roberts and Bob Booker were our scorers. We scored our three goals in a 9-minute spell, just a minute quicker than three we scored in the 4-1 win at Chelsea in the first week of April 2 years ago. It was our final game against a side in the top four, and the only point we'd taken off any of them this season. It's the first time we've now had three successive draws in the top tier, since the only other occasion we've had such a run, back in January 1937. As it stands, Wisser and Mbeumo are our joint top scorers with 8 goals each, with just 6 games to play. There's only been 6 of our previous 96 seasons, where no one has reached double figures. We've already beaten the lowest, which was in the 46-game season of 80-81, which had a mid-table finish in the third tier, when Bob Booker was our sole top scorer with just 7 goals. Even more remarkable was that he scored 4 of them in the final 6 games of the season.
There you go, JB, with some facts and some funk. And like I said, a bit of a rarity. JB's talking about, you know, just coming back from those losing positions, as they say, which is all good. But listen, lady, I mean, we talked about JB. Let's just go over to the Gowler. Okay, I saw the Gowler as well. He was also in Nashville. And he was sitting down there watching the game on the big screen together. And then he's sitting down there. He got his computer out and he got his stats and his facts. And he thought he's going to give us the lowdown, the statistical lowdown, and also the tactical lowdown on that Villa match, which will be very interesting. And also looking forward to what we can expect from Sheffield United.
Hey, this is Jacob Gallagher with Bees Breakdown. So Aston Villa ended with 70% possession, but Brentford won the XG battle. Bees fans enjoyed some clinical finishing. The Bees ended with 2.24 expected goals on target on only 1.56 XG. And Brentford surprisingly created most of their XG from open play, although they still use set plays to get numbers forward. And I thought that Villa did well to use clever movement to create some chances going forward. Brentford allowed some penetrating passes that typically you don't see with their compact defense. And a lot of this had to do with Villa's movement and especially their blocking. Villa routinely set like basketball style screens to prevent Roslev from preventing crosses into the box. But the Bees also are still having some momentary lapses on defense, particularly defending crosses. Still, a much-needed point for the Bees against one of the top teams in the Premier League at the moment. All right, so for that Sheffield United preview, I have some good news and some bad news. The good news is that they've only kept 1 clean sheet all season, but the bad news is that that match was against the Bees back in December. So Sheffield are bottom of the table on 16 points. They're technically overperforming their XG with 30 goals on 29 XG, but they've conceded 82 goals only on 60 XGA. And for reference, last season, Leeds conceded the most goals in the league with 78. So by the end of the season, Sheffield may actually top Derby's record of 89 goals conceded in a Premier League season. Sheffield also have the worst pass completion percentage and the highest percentage of long passes attempted. They're pretty much last in every passing and possession statistic, except for the percentage of goal kicks launched. They also have the second highest PPDA, which just backs up that they're not a high.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Pressing team, they're going to consistently drop into that low block and allow the other team possession. However, over the past three matches, they've created more XG than they've allowed, and they've gotten two draws in that time, so the Bees need to be careful not to give Sheffield their second clean sheet of the season.
So there you go, Gowler, live and direct from Nashville, giving us a lowdown, statistical and tactical lowdown on the Villa game, and looking forward to the Sheffield game. And just quickly, Aston Villa, they were effective at creating goal-scoring opportunities from the flanks and also were strong at finishing, but they gave away a lot of free kicks around the box. As for Brentford, we were effective at creating goal-scoring opportunities from the flanks and also we were strong at finishing. We lost possession often, we were caught offside often, and we also committed a high number of individual errors. Top performers, according to WhoScored.com, was Ollie Watkins, 8.5, which is pretty high. Then Johan Wiese and Sergio Reguilon as well, two top scorers. And then it was McGinn and it was Rodgers. So that just kind of gives you a vibe about that game. So, I mean, to me, that's a good base for us to look at going into the Sheffield United game. Tell you what we're going to do, though. We're going to have to talk about the Sheffield United game because it's a big match. We're going to take a little break. We're going to come back and then we're going to talk about the Blades. We've just come down off the high of the weekend, chilling out for a few days, and then we're back in it again. Saturday, out very early. We've got the Blades coming down. Mark and Reg are coming down. You probably heard talk about a lot. Go to England with them, but they're coming down very early. Actually, they're coming down on Friday. They're so excited. And then we're going out early. We're going to hit the town. For them, it's their bit of their last send-off because they believe that they're not going to come back to Brentford for quite a while. For us, it's just a bit of a party. You know, we've got to get ourselves fired up for this game on Saturday. We're hoping that everyone's going to get themselves out early and getting themselves in the mode because we really need to get behind that team 100%. But the Blades coming down. I mean, we went up to Sheffield. Great away day, I'll say. We'd always brag about that away day, saying it's a fantastic away day. However, on the pitch, it didn't go according to plan. It was a bit rubbish on the pitch. We cannot repeat that at all, can we, Laney?
No, we can't. It was one of the flattest kind of, well, bereft of like options that Thomas Frank has been able to call upon. It seemed to be that just before Christmas that, you know, we just lost Brian and Bumo. It was the game after Brighton. We lost that one. And then we thought, although we weakened, we still stood a chance. And we did have a couple of opportunities. You know, I think Wiese should have scored. But it was probably the one of the low points. And that's not to diss Sheffield United because, you know, you said we've got a lot of time. We've got a lot of history between the two clubs. We've sort of been up and down together. Romero, you know, they're a very big, proud club, and I've got some great memories of going there and some great games. But that certainly wasn't one of them. Up at Bramall Lane, and we came away kind of thinking, right, okay, it's going to be that kind of rest of the season, isn't it? We thought we would escape, you know, when Ivan Toney was absent, but then once you took Brian and Boomer out of that as well, and obviously Rico Henry, and then it's when all the injuries started to pile one on top of the other, and it was a desperate afternoon. So we need to put that right. Things are improving for us in terms of the players that we've got at our disposal, and I'm hearing that there may be more. You know, there was, you know, Sharda, it was I think he might be available this weekend, you know, whether it's just on the bench in the same way that we fed Brian and Bumo back in, but I think we start with Brian and Toney on Saturday. We have to go all guns blazing, and you and I have said this for weeks, Bill, haven't we? It's if we could kind of coincide all of our players to be available, it's for this game. We always knew that this game was going to be critical. 3 points, you know, are so rare down at the bottom at the moment that, you know, each one is it transforms the look. 6 games to go now. We've got Sheffield United this weekend, then we go to Luton the following weekend, then we've got Everton. 3 games. Three teams below us, and then obviously we've got Fulham, who you're not quite sure which one you're going to get. So there's points to be had out of our next four games. We have to be really, really confident out of that. And if we don't get them, then I start to worry. But it's not something that I'm losing sleep over. I've got every faith that Brentford are going to get what they need from the rest of the season. And it starts on Saturday. It's very much like the Nottingham Forest game. We know that there's more to it than just the 3 points or the team in front of us. It's going to shape the rest of the season. It's going to shape our survival.
And it's interesting. I mean, you said start for Ivan Toney, and obviously Ivan Toney didn't start on Saturday because of the injury that he's got. He's got a hip injury, so he came on. But you're thinking that you should start with him. I mean, yeah, so you're not thinking that the Wiese and Boomer combination did all right on Saturday and you wouldn't continue that?
No, absolutely not. No, it has done all right, but there's a couple of the crosses that went in, and you think if Ivan's there, then that's a headed goal. Ivan can sniff. He's too good to not have in our team. And I understand some fans have kind of been haven't been as impressed by him since he in the more recent weeks than they he's clearly not at his best. But I think he's such a predatory striker. I think he brings so much. We know what he brings to our game. We need him against Sheffield United. We need all our best players on that pitch, Bill. I think boxing clever. I think you're asking for trouble. I really do.
Well, okay, so listen, I mean, talk about trouble. You've got Mark from Sheffield. He's going to be coming down for the weekend to watch the Bees play against him. So I'm going to have a little chat with Mark from Sheffield. Mark the Blade. He's going to give us the lowdown on Sheffield United. So big game on Saturday. Looking forward to it, actually. You know me. I've been looking forward to this game for absolutely ages. It's been the one game for me. All these other games, they're just like, superfluous to needs. But it's the Blades who are coming down to New Griffin Park. And who's coming down to watch the Blades? Is the Blades. It's coming down. Mark and Reg, you hear me talking about them lots and lots on this podcast. I go to England with them. We have proper laughs all over the world. Spent time in Qatar and, Brazil and all sorts of places as well. But I've also spent time in Sheffield. We went and saw them up in Sheffield just before Christmas, which wasn't the best trip for the Bees on the pitch. But off the pitch, we had a brilliant time. But anyway, enough of me warbling on. I'll introduce you to Mark. Mark, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Cheers. Yeah. Not bad at all. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. You know what I'm saying? You could hear me. I'm bouncing. I've got my Nashville vibe. I've got my cowboy hat on. I've got my cowboy boots on. I'm still I'm playing my guitar. I'm trying to get everyone on song for Saturday because, the Bees will be singing quite hard on Saturday, as you know that. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know if the Blazers are going to be singing. I mean, after the Chelsea result, you've got to be singing, aren't you?
I'll tell you what, the thing that was really nice about Sunday was that you actually had the stadium getting behind the team for a change. I mean, I think, Fulham as well, the last couple of home games, it feels like the crowd started to lose its nervousness a little bit and start to actually enjoy being in the Premier League, which is something we haven't been able to do all season. And, we haven't picked up many points. We didn't pick up many points in the last couple of games either. But at least we've been in the game. At least it's been entertaining. At least it feels like we're going and attacking, and we're playing a lot better in midfield as well. So it's just feeling like the season's just starting as it's ending, to be honest.
And I mean, you mentioned that as well. I mean, your season. I mean, look, Sheffield United. They're in the Premier League for a few seasons. Their first season was fantastic. Eventually they went out the Premier League, but then they went down last season. And to be quite honest with you, you and Burnley properly romped it last season. You just left everyone for dead, and you've come into this league. And some people might be confused. What exactly has happened? Because it should have been this bad, should it?
Well, it's been chaos from our point of view. I mean, I think most United fans knew what was coming before the season started. We ended last season. I think, I personally felt that we had a better side and a better chance this time round of doing okay in the Premier League than we did when we went up under Wilder a couple of years back. I mean, it's a strange one. We really looked like we were going somewhere at the end of last season. We had some players who felt like they had the ability to make a stamp on the Premier League. People like Liman and Dye, Sander Berg. We had McAtee on loan from City, who we've got back again, obviously. But we also had Tommy Doyle, who was great for us last season. And we brought in some improvements around the back, Armer Hodzic, who looked a really good player in the Championship. We knew we had weaknesses. We were weak at full-back, and, you know, we've had some injuries there which haven't helped us either. But before the summer started, you were sort of looking and thinking, if we play this right, invest a bit of money and build on what we've got and get Doyle and McAtee back in one guy's rubber, you know, buy one, loan the other back, it felt like we had something to build on. But no sooner the season ended than the story started going around that we only had £20 million to spend, that we were unlikely to be able to get the money to buy Doyle back, because basically we weren't going to have enough money to invest in one player. We might or might not get McAtee back. And then the story was that Undai was possibly going, then he was staying, then he was going, then he was staying. Next minute, he went on the eve of the season. And just to make things worse, Sander Berg followed him out the door within a couple of days. And they were our two best players last season, the two best players at the club, other than Doyle and McAtee, who were on loan. So we kind of came into the start of the season without three of our four best players. In fact, we were without all four of them to start the season, and then McAtee joined us on loan in what, back end of the transfer window, wasn't it? So, you know, last few days, in fact, I think it was the last day of the transfer window at the end of August. So by the time the season started, I think all of us have just sat there holding our head in the hands, sort of looking and going, this is going to be a disaster. We've lost Doyle, we've lost we've lost Dundai, who was the big one. I mean, he was the best young player we've had at our club for a long, long time. And we lost him on the eve of the season. We sold Berg to Burnley, which was a bit of an insult, considering they were going to be one of our chief rivals for trying to stay up. And we'd bought in a few cheap transfers. I mean, you know, a few million quid for a guy from the Swedish Premier League, which, no disrespect to the Swedish Premier League, but he was hardly going to set the English Premier League alight, and a couple of other cheap signings. And then, you know, I suppose things improved for us a little bit as the transfer window came to a close, because with the money we got from selling them Dai and Berg, we brought in a couple of decent-looking signings in Gustavo Hamer, who's been, you know, not bad at all, to be fair to him. I mean, he's had a tough start, like every one of our players have had, to being in the Premier League this season. But you can see his quality at times, and you can see that he was worth the money we invested in him. And then Vinicius Souza, who, I mean, Joy's still out, I think, on Souza from a lot of the fans, myself included. But at least, you know, it was a £10 million signing, and it felt like we were reinvesting in the squad a little bit. But basically, we started the season upside down, is the best way of putting it. The squad that we had a chance of building on got dismantled, and we then set about trying to bring in players who had no Premier League experience, several of them who had no experience of English football at all, and brought them in, you know, 2 weeks into the season, which is just, it was asking for trouble, and trouble's what we got.
So the question, interestingly, because and forgive me, because maybe because of my Blades history, maybe isn't what it should be. But I thought, you know, I mean, you look at the Newcastle fans, they're like, oh, we're in the money, and they've got, you know, going around with their sort of kind of towels on their heads and all that sort of stuff that they got on with up there because they got some, you know, Saudi investment. Now, I thought you got Saudi investment, and if I remember rightly, beforehand, you were all jumping up and down saying, oh, yes, we're going to be the richest club in the world. But what's gone on there then?
Yeah, as always, with all things played, it never is what it seems like it's going to be. And it felt too good to be true, and it was too good to be true. And we got bought over by a Saudi prince, but we kind of didn't get bought over. It was a complete mess in traditional Blades fashion, really. So way back when in League One, what, four, five, six seasons ago, Kevin McCabe, our owner at the time, brought in this guy. He was a Saudi prince. He gave him half the club for supposedly £1 and £10 million investment or something like that. And I think he thought he was a lot richer than he actually was. And to be fair to Prince Abdullah, who's our owner now, I don't think he's necessarily done anything untoward. It's that typical game of rich people owning football clubs, you know. A guy wants to get investment in his club. Another guy who's a rich bloke comes along and says, I'd be interested in getting involved in your football club. They make a deal. One assumes the other's got a lot more money than he actually has. He played it cute, I suppose. He wanted a football club. He put his money in as he was asked to. They then fell out about it all. It ended in court. One was trying to buy the other out. The other was trying to buy the first one out. Everybody argued over who had the right to buy who out. We eventually got it sorted when we went up the first time a couple of years ago under Chris Wilder. And the court sorted it out and decided that the Prince owned the club. So he then set about paying what he was told he had to pay for the club. And not being the richest Saudi prince out there, he ended up with not a huge amount of money left to invest in the football team. So we've ended up with an owner that I think his intentions are perfectly decent. I wouldn't suggest anything bad in that respect. I mean, others might disagree, but I don't think he's a bad person in any particular way. He's just not the multi-billionaire owner that you need to be a successful Premier League club, I suppose. Yeah. So we've been doing it on the cheap and getting what happens when you do it on the cheap, unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah, well, there's some teams that are not doing it on the cheap, but they're doing it on the cheat, as they say, and they're spending far too much money and much more money than they ever should be. So at least you've got some sort of honour in the Blades camp, or well, hopefully we'll do. Well, we won't talk about the points deduction anyway, but we'll maybe talk about that a little bit later. But I'll talk about the roundabout, okay? The roundabout or Wilder. So, you know, Wilder, you loved him. You absolutely loved the Wilder. And then all of a sudden, you sort of fell out of love the Wilder, if I remember rightly. And then all of a sudden, somebody years later comes back to you, cap in hand, and says, hello, do you forgive me? Can I come back? I'll do a job for you. You know, I'll wash your dishes for you, and I'll mow your lawn. And you all went, all right then. I mean, what's the feeling about Wilder? I mean, you know, it must be a weird one for you.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I still have a lot of time for Chris Wilder personally, because, you know, we've had some really rubbish seasons over the years watching Sheffield United. I've seen lots and lots of disappointing seasons, and we had some great times in the Chris Wilder first time round. I mean, we were languishing in League One for six or seven seasons and showed no signs of getting out of there. And then he came along, he gave us pride back, he gave passion back to the club, he brought players in, and he made some really astute, good signings and got the place bouncing again. It was great. And I think it's, you know, football fans get too upset too quickly, don't they, with people. And yeah, he blotted his copybook. He threw his toys out the pram a bit when we were having that terrible second season last time round, which now doesn't seem quite as terrible compared to the terrible season this time round. But, you know, I don't think it helped him that it was in the middle of COVID. And, you know, you haven't got the fans around. I think there was a lot made about us not having the fans in the ground last time. But I think, from a manager's point of view and from a player's point of view, forget what difference it makes to them on the field, having the fans there and whether that drives them forward. But it must feel quite a lonely, desperate sort of place when you're not winning games, when you're getting beaten. I mean, God, we didn't win a game of football till, I can't even remember now, but it was either running towards Christmas or possibly even into the new year before we actually won a game in that second season. So he was getting pretty desperate, and he didn't have a lot of love around him because we were in those COVID times, everything's shut down. And rightly or wrongly, he kind of decided he wanted out, and I think that upset a lot of fans. And then his record since then hadn't been amazing either, had it? Which I think is also a big factor. You know, I think if he'd been tearing it up at other clubs and then come back, everybody would have probably forgiven him and welcomed him back and everything else. As it is, I think there's just that certain sense of, is this the answer to the problem? And, you know, time will tell, won't it? But to be perfectly honest, I don't think it's unfair to say it, that, you know, Chris Wilder could be an absolutely fantastic manager and could be the answer to the problem, but we've got some big problems ahead as a football club. And if he doesn't do well next season, it's not necessarily down to Chris Wilder. We've got, what, 16, 18 players out of contract or at the end of their loan. Can't remember if it's 16 or 18, but it's one of those two. It's really hard to work out what our team would be next season And we didn't spend an awful lot of money this season when we were in the Premier League, so God knows how much money we're going to have trying to build a team next season when we need, in theory, 15, 16 new players, because surely a squad is a squad. They might be a lot of loans and free transfers and stuff, but yeah, you've got to be a bit of a miracle worker, haven't you, to turn a football team around after relegation when the fans will be muted and crowds will probably be down. And you know, the Championship's a tough league, everybody knows that. It's going to be a really tough league, and we could struggle. I think that's the biggest fear for a lot of United fans at the moment, is next season is no gimme at all. It's I don't think any of us know. I don't think you'd find a United fan that could even predict what the starting 11 would be next season. I'm not even sure we'll have 11 players that we've got at the moment that will still be there for next season. So it's going to be a bit interesting.
Yeah, so, I mean, talk about Wilder. I mean, obviously, you know, Blades have had a terrible season. But then all of a sudden, Chris Wilder reappears and we've just done the old, oh, no. Because he happened to reappear just before the match with Brentford. So it's the new manager turns up. I hate to say the new manager bounce, because, again, apparently there's a... If you speak to the statos, you speak to, you know, our technical people behind there, the one that do the stats, and Matthew Benner and his people, they'll say actually new manager bounce doesn't actually count, because from a statistical point of view, actually, there's over 10, we actually find out that the new manager loses more games than he wins, actually, statistically. But it just sounds quite good because the new manager bounce thing. But you definitely seem to have got some sort of new manager bounce on that day. And that must be your sort of first celebration for quite a while. I mean, what was it that made you win that game? Because we were just, I mean, was it the fact that you were quite good, or was it the fact that we were just goddamn awful?
I'd love to say it was that we were quite good. Yeah, you were pretty poor, to be honest. yeah, I mean, we did have a bit of a bounce. I mean, I think when you'd had the kind of horror show that we'd been having for the last few months, a change of manager was always going to help. And I'd say that with the greatest of respect to Paul Heckingbottom, because I don't think anybody thinks this season is Paul Heckingbottom's fault. He was thrown under the bus with what happened in the summer. He was given the impossible situation. And, you know, okay, some of the level of humiliation we've suffered, some people will probably point at, you know, could have done a better job sort of thing. But the rug was firmly pulled from under his feet. And, you know, I think one of the things you've really seen this season in the Premier League is when confidence goes, it can be chaotic and disastrous. And that result against Brentford, as much as it coming down to the fact that you guys were not great on the day, you got a lot of players out and everything else. But also, we had a chance to just settle the ship a little bit and get rid of all that negativity that had been building up from getting hammered week after week after week. And I imagine things weren't great around the dressing room in terms of confidence and everything else. And a new person comes in, and maybe it's a chance to gee up a dispirited bunch of players. And the bounce didn't last for long, did it? But we put in a decent performance against you by our standards that day. And we actually did pretty well a few days later against Liverpool at home, where we lost, I think, 2-0. But by our standards this season, it was a reasonably decent performance. And they never looked like thumping us, which a lot of sides have looked like doing this season. And you would have expected Liverpool to take us apart a bit more than they actually did on that day. So,
And the Liverpool game, I think it's a couple of days beforehand, actually, because you played Liverpool and you showed signs of... in fact, I remember we were chatting in the pub. I mean, great away days. We said, you know, Sheffield, we had a really good day, really good pubs, really good vibe, you know, a proper away day with, you know, Sheffield fans and Brentford fans in there all chatting to each other, talking about football. The pub was buzzing. It was lively. Everyone, even though we lost, went away from that game thinking, what a great away day it is. Because to be honest with you, and we could probably talk about it a little bit later, this Premier League malarkey, a lot of the away days are fairly average, I would say, compared to the Championship away days. And I think that I'm talking about quality of fan, and fan who kind of wants to talk about football and knows about football, and you go there and you feel kind of like you're in a football environment rather than in a sort of Hollywood movie, because it's something that's been advertised on the TV so much. Like, you know, it sort of attracts all these people that are kind of there, but they're not you know, not all of them, but a lot of them are not quite the same. It's just different conversations. But anyway, you know, so that was quite, you know, quite an interesting one, like I said to you, there in Sheffield, where you got the result that you wanted on that day. And no, we weren't great. You said to me about the Liverpool game, and I was quite worried actually when you said that, you know, we're looking better, and I thought this is going to be so typically Brentford, and it was Brentford. But I mean, forget about that day, because you know a lot about the Bees, you've seen the Bees, we talk about it when we go away for England, about, you know, our various teams and our various players. I mean, what players are you kind of a bit nervous about for Saturday?
You know what, I've got to say, I've kind of lost track as to who's actually in your team at the moment. You've had so many players out with injury. Obviously, you know, you've got the likes of Tony. Everybody's going to be fearing Tony, although it doesn't feel like he's quite come back. I mean, not surprisingly, he's been out for God knows how long. I suppose you're not going to hit the ground quite running in the way that he was last season. But obviously, his quality is a threat. He's been picked for England and played for England and
scored for England.
Yeah, scored for England as well. Hope we don't have to watch him from the penalty spot. That's one definite thing, because he never seems to miss, does he? I mean, you know, people like Wissa, if he's available, he looks a neat player.
Brian and Bumo.
Who else?
Brian and Bumo, mate. Brian, you've got to be talking about Brian. Oh yes, he's back, mate. He smashed. Great. He smashed it against Villa.
I mean, this is the thing: is that you've had several players who, you know, you would have thought were going to have big seasons for you, who haven't been part of the team for quite a while, have you? And it feels like you're starting to get them all back by the sound of it.
I'm just saying, so Blaze, you're obviously going to have to combat the Bees. I mean, what are you, because obviously you beat us in just before Christmas, but you know, you've got to be confident. You know, you played Chelsea on Sunday. I mean, I watched it in Dubai. I mean, we were having a right laugh of all the Chelsea fans who were kind of giving it quite large, actually, just like the Forest fans were giving it large before then, but the Chelsea fans were giving it large. And when you scored your two goals, you know, at those separate moments, everybody started cheering and laughing. I think I sent you some video clips over as well of everybody sort of kind of cheering and laughing at the Chelsea fans who, again, they thought it was going to be an easy 3 points, and it's never an easy 3 points. What do you think that you may be able to do against the Bees that you kind of did against Chelsea? Where's the fear going to come from? Where's your firepower coming from? What's going to strike us down?
The thing that will be interesting is, I suppose, to be fair, what team he actually puts out, because one of our bigger problems in the last sort of month or so has been that we've got a very good looking sort of partnership between McBurney and Brereton Diaz, in terms of the two of them seem to play well off each other. They look like a proper front two, but neither of them seem to be fit enough to actually get on the pitch at the same time very often. So yeah, if those two turn up together, then they're a handful in an old-fashioned English football sort of way, in that neither of them are the fastest, but they're both strong, they're both quite intelligent footballers, and they both play well off each other, and so they have been causing quite a bit of trouble for some of the teams we've been up against in the last few weeks or so. You've got people like McAtee on his day, he's a good player, but he's not a guaranteed starter at the moment either, because we've been shuffling things around in the field. I still like to believe that Cameron Archer's a threat if we can get him on the pitch. Again, he's been injured for God knows how long. I mean, he came back on Sunday and he came off the bench, but he's been out much more than he's been in recent times. And, you know, in midfield, I mean, Hamer's the one who's, in terms of a goal-scoring threat, Hamer from midfield or McAtee. Hamer almost certainly starts. McAtee may start, may come off the bench. And beyond that, to be fair, I'd say they're our threats. We don't seem to score a lot of goals from set pieces. We don't seem to be sort of like getting the centre halves onto things and scoring from corners particularly regularly, with the big men coming up from the back. Our fullbacks, you've got Jadon Bogle. I mean, he scored against Chelsea, didn't he? And he's always got a goal in him here and there, but not the biggest threat in the world. He's good on his days, Bogle. But
I'll ask a question while you're talking about defenders then. Just what's happened? Because obviously, you know, just around the corner, when I went to your place, and around the corner from you, you sort of bump into him. I think when you're doing your dog walking, you bump into John Egan, who lives not too far from you as well, don't you? The old ex-Bedford player.
Oh, God. I mean, this is one of the things that's maybe been lost a little bit over the course of the season is, yes, we've been poor. Yes, we deserve to get down. Yeah, you know, we've set all kinds of unwanted records this season. We've also had a hell of a lot of injuries. You know, people like Egan got injured sometime in, what, September, I think it was. Basham, who was probably too old for the Premier League nowadays anyway, he obviously had a horror injury as well. We've barely seen much of Bulldog this season. He's done well when he's played, but he's hitting that 31 sort of age and is injured more often than he's fit. Low on the left side of defence, our left back, he's barely played a handful of games maybe this season. Armour Hodges has struggled without Egan alongside him. Jack Robinson's had a good season, to be fair to him. And we've had people like Austin Trusty, who we brought in from Arsenal in the summer for £5 million. And he's been trying to hold the defence together along with Armour Hodzic and Robinson in a difficult situation for really. I mean, you know, his first season in the Premier League, he did well on loan at Birmingham last season, I think, in the Championship. But it's a big step up for him. And you've got an unsettled defence around him. So, you know, we've had all kinds of issues around the team, really, in terms of, you know, like up front as well. People like Jebison, who looked promising at the end of last season, he's not set foot on the pitch. Not quite sure what the story is with him, but I understand he's not well, unfortunately. I don't think the club's really announced what's happened to him, but he's not been available all season. So that's obviously a bit worrying from a personal point of view, but hopefully it's nothing too serious. But, you know, Archer, who we spent 20-odd million quid on, has played a fraction of the games. Yeah, it's been one of those seasons, I suppose.
Yeah. So, okay, so listen, big game. Saturday, coming down to New Griffin Park. Little do you know, you probably don't remember this, but as you probably heard the podcast a little bit earlier, JB was giving some facts and some funk. JB comes up with all sorts. He sits there with his little machine and he just spurts them all out, facts and funk. And I think the last time that we actually beat Sheffield United was that time when you came down when we were in the third tier. And remember, I went camping with my kids. I went camping in, like, you know, in Staines or Raysbury or something, out that way, you know. And I came in on the train and I went camping and we met you. And we beat you 3-1 with my old mate Grig scored a goal as well. I don't know if you remember that one, do you?
Yeah, I think I do remember that one, to be perfectly honest. I remember you guys going off camping, and I didn't remember it was 3-1, but I seem to remember it was a pretty miserable day from our point of view.
That's right,
it's a strange one, isn't it, really? Because despite the fact that over the last few years you have flown and we have kind of wobbled a lot and not been anything like as successful as you guys have been in recent years, we've not had a bad head-to-head record against you, which makes me start to feel like maybe this weekend is the time that you get one over on us again, unfortunately. But it's one of those, isn't it, at the moment? Because, to be fair, I long since gave up on what could happen for us this season. It's all about not conceding 6, 7, 8 or 9. So, you know, if we concede 3 points on Saturday, if we put up a damn good performance and it's an exciting game, I'd take that over a drab, disappointing game or an absolute hammering. It's kind of one of those. But don't get us wrong, we're coming down and we're hoping we're going to win. We're hoping we're going to keep our little run going against you. And, you know, as long as it doesn't send you locked down, and as long as we can have a nice day, that'd be a nice change this season. Because, yeah, we haven't had many good weekends, to be perfectly honest.
No.
And out with the bees is always fun. So it'd be nice to have a game where we all enjoy it and we all have a nice day and no one's too disappointed afterwards. I mean, hopefully be fair, I don't think either of us have got too much to play for now this season. I know you're still slightly under threat, but I can't really see it being a problem. I can't really see you going down, if I'm honest. And it'd take an absolute miracle and a hell of a lot of points deductions for us to have a chance of staying up. So I don't think we need to worry about it from a can we do an amazing escape sort of scenario. I think that's long since gone, unfortunately.
And what I'll say also is, obviously, you know, if you beat us tomorrow, it just makes things a little bit spicier. That's all I'll say, because I think everyone's banked on the fact we're going to get 3 points against you, and if we don't, and if Luton or someone like that win, which they've not expected to do them, or Nottingham Forest as well, then it just makes things a little bit tighter in that zone. And also, I will also say to you is that, you know, at the end of the day, is that we don't mind if you give us a 6-0 hammering, okay, and then you can go and beat somebody else next week, which is fine, and you can enjoy that one instead. So I'm going to ask you to give a score prediction.
Oh God, I hadn't even thought about it, if I'm dead honest. But
yeah.
I'd say probably maybe 2-1 to you. I'd like to think maybe we can. Yeah, I mean, I think we can get ourselves a goal. We've been looking more threatening more recently, and we have been at least getting a goal a game. We managed to get a goal at Liverpool, and to be fair, we deserve that goal at Liverpool as well. I mean, don't get us wrong, they deserve to beat us. They have 83% possession. But you could kind of see it coming. We were getting forward with purpose at times, and it wasn't a massive surprise when we actually did manage to get ourselves a goal. So I'd back us to get a goal. Our defence always worries me. And two is maybe, I think from my point of view, I'm just hoping we don't have one of our calamitous defence days, because the thing that's been most disappointing from a player's point of view this season, amongst a lot of disappointing things, is that we have this look about us sometimes where when we concede one, we could concede three in the next 10 minutes, and often quite regularly do. So cutting that out of our game and being able to come and have a nice day and an exciting game that maybe gets decided either way late on would be fun. And I'll go for 2-1 for you, but I hope I'm wrong.
There you go, 2-1 to us. And by the sounds of it, with both our defences, you know, our absolute makeshift defence that seems to be letting in goals for fun, and yours letting in goals for fun. I mean, I'm going to do my prediction later with Laney, but maybe I should go for 7-6 instead of what I go for later, because it sounds like it's going to be one of those type of games. I hope not. Or in a way, I hope it is, as long as we win. But anyway, listen, Mark, it's been absolutely brilliant chatting to you. I'm very much looking forward to you seeing you on Saturday morning very early for breakfast. We're doing a bit of breakfast over, I don't know, Kew, or Kew by the river, or on the green, or might go to Richmond or something like that. But we're starting very early. I know you're very scared because you're not used to these early starts, are you? Not used to these early starts.
It's not so much the early starts, it's just I know how good you are at having an all-day sesh, Bill, so that kind of worries me more than anything.
So there you go. I've got them worried. I've got the Blades fans worried. We just need to get the Blades team worried now, and we're all sorted. Mark, good catching up with you, and I'll see you on Saturday.
Yeah, look forward to it, mate. Take care.
There you go, Mark the Blade, and he's pretty relaxed, to be quite honest with you. I mean, obviously they haven't had the best season in the world, and he's got used to it. And the most dangerous thing, I suppose, for us is just probably like his attitude, his team's attitude. They just think, well, we've got nothing to lose, and you know, we just pick up whatever points we can, and you know, maybe Brentford are a beatable game, and we can actually go and beat them. So let's just go off and do it. And there's absolutely no one expects anything of them at all, and I suppose that's going to be the biggest danger for us and the biggest danger for the Brentford team. So we need to be 100, we've said this before, Laney, but we need to be 100% on our guard, don't we? And we need to be 100% on point. And like I said to you beforehand, us fans need to be on point. We need to be going there. We need to be from day one, even beforehand. You know, when we played Bournemouth in the playoff semi-final, literally we're half an hour beforehand, we were like singing the roofs off the stadium. But we need to be giving it loads of that in this game on Saturday, because this is a massive game.
Yeah, I'm not going to repeat myself for the third time, but yeah, it is. It's the biggest game of our season, it's a game that we have to win this one. You know, a point out of this, I'd you know, I don't think is acceptable. Acceptable is probably the wrong word, but I think we have to be winning this. You know, if we are a Premiership football club for next season, we have to be able to find a way of beating Sheffield United at home on Saturday. And that's not to, I'm not having a snide dig at Sheffield United, but they've proved that they're not strong enough to be in the Premier League this season. We have to prove that we are capable and we are good enough to be in the Premier League. Didn't prove that up at their place. We have to resurrect that on Saturday.
And the resurrection. I mean, again, you're looking at pretty much the same team again. Laney, you know, I mean, you're talking about Tony starting, but everybody else, you're looking at the same team.
I'm not sure Damsgaard gets another start. You know, he did nothing wrong necessarily, but you know, I thought. Yarmolenko may come in again, but you know, Damsgaard's got more experience, but I think Yarmolenko's kind of got is slightly more direct. I don't see massive changes. I think there will be some. I depends if, you know, Pinnock might make a remarkable return. You know, maybe this is not the game for him, but he's not too far away, hopefully. So yeah,
and we need him, and we need him with those aerial balls, don't we?
Yeah, massively. You know, yeah. he's so invincible in the air at times. You know, and he's just a huge miss. So yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Reguilon, assuming that he's not injured, he starts again. But KLP can fit in, but I think we're at our strongest when you've got a specialist left back there rather than someone that's filling in. But we need pace and we need width and we need to get at them and we need to create loads of chances. I think you do that with Brian and Tony in the team.
And strengths and weaknesses, Sheffield United's strengths, stealing the ball from the opposition. So obviously sort of quite aggressive is the way that they play. But their weaknesses, finishing scoring chances, avoiding individual errors, defending set pieces, avoiding fouling in dangerous areas, protecting the lead, very weak at keeping possession of the ball, very weak at defending against attacks down the wings, very weak at defending against long shots, very weak against defending against skillful players. So there's loads there that we can get our teeth into. We just need to make sure that we just don't get into a lull of a false sense of security, really.
Yeah, and they're not going to come here to try and be clever and do low blocks and, you know, try and sneak. It's all over for them unless they actually, you know, they go and win this game of football by scoring more goals than us. And I think there's going to be goals in this, but they've shown that in the recent weeks. They just don't give up. You know, we can look at the Newcastle game, we can look at the Arsenal game, we can look at the Brighton game. You know, they're hemorrhaging goals at that stage of the season. They seem to have got through that, but you hit them with the right deliveries, you hit them with the right intensity, they crack. So we have to just make sure it's a Man United performance, it's not a Brighton performance.
Right, definitely. So listen, Laney, give us a score prediction.
Very edgy 3-1 victory.
Oh, 3-1 victory to the mighty Bees. I'm going to go for a 4-2 victory to the Bees as well, which is all good. So listen, I mean, it could be a big game, like I said to you, big game of Saturday. I just want to just recall one final story, because, you know, the way that we've been playing, we're converting people all around the world. And, you know, like, hopefully, like I said to you, we're going to get a result on Saturday. We'll be able to stay up, and then more people around the world will see us, and we can go to wherever we need to next year, probably Chicago. We're in the next fan fest is going to be just for a bit of a laugh of a weekend. But it's quite funny because there was this character, right? And he was a Nashville. He was actually a Nashville bee, not my mate Kevin the Nashville Bee, but another Nashville Bee. And he'd brought in Brentford, and I saw him with a Brentford shirt on. He's chatting to me, he goes, "Hey Billy, how you doing?" So had a good old conversation with him. Anyway, I was chatting to Paul Buckle and Gary Blissett and Marcus Gale by one of the stands, and this guy comes over, and he's wearing a Crystal Palace shirt. And I seen him, and he's like chatting to me, and I was going, "So I'm a bit confused, because I'm sure I saw you in a Brentford shirt earlier." And he was like going, "Oh yeah, I had a Brentford shirt on earlier." I said, "You know, so mate, no, that's a number. You can't be doing that. You can't be wearing a Crystal Palace shirt, mate. If you're Brentford, you're Brentford through and through." And it's really hilarious. I've got the camera out, I've got the video, I may send it to you later. literally the guy goes, hold on a second, and he literally ripped off the Crystal Palace shirt, and he had a Brentford shirt underneath. He threw it on the floor, stamped on it. He goes, I'm never going to wear it again. And I just thought, hilarious. Those kind of things that you'll see from different characters around the world, but it also goes, shows you the power of the Bees, the power of Brentford, and the power of, well, football, as it goes. You know what I'm saying?
Sounds like the power of you, by the sounds of it. So you scared the fucking life out of him, by the sounds of it.
That's hilarious, like, you know. But yeah, it's just seeing him rip off the shirt and just throwing it on the floor, and I just thought, that's good, that's good. And then he said, I'll never wear it again. And I thought, that's exactly what we want to hear. So I think he's been converted as well. So that's it. Job's been done slowly, one by one, lady. But anyway, listen, this is all good. Shout out to us. Got to give a shout out to Paul Buckle again for taking care of us, and Rebecca and his little boy Teddy as well, which is all good. Shout also going out to the Nashville Bee and Ben as well, who gave us a great time, like I said to you, in Nashville. And also, like I said, Richie the Tallahassee Bee as well. And Michelle was out there. He was in the Globe the previous Saturday. It was so mad seeing him in the Globe one Saturday, then I see him in Nashville the following week. So like I said to you, loads of bees out there. It's good to see you all out there, the Brentford posse in America, getting stronger and stronger.
But Laney, this is Besotted Pride of West London podcast. I'm just trying to get us on an up vibe, trying to get us kind of really vibes up for this game on Saturday. It's going to be really nerve-wracking. It's going to be my first probably real nervous game since for quite a while, to be quite honest with you. So I think for all Bees fans as well, like I said, just go out and enjoy yourself and make sure we get behind the team on Saturday. My name's Billy Grant, and I'm sitting here in the virtual joint with my maid Laney.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you too. Like I said, you get down to New Griffin Park, get down to Brentford area very early, go down there, get your mates, we're going to play the Blaze, as you say.
Come on,
you
Bees.
Let's blunt them blades. Blunt them all over. You Bees.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.